Hey everyone, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome to Season 2 of the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast. We built the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast to focus on one of MedTech's largest sectors, and we're concentrating this season on our good friends at Innovus. In this episode, our kickoff episode, I'll be speaking with Louis Vogt. He's Group President of the Reconstructive Business at Innovus, and we're going to talk about Louis's background, his path to MedTech. We'll also talk about the changes that are going on in orthopedics, both large joint, but also foot and ankle, where Innovus is paying a whole lot of attention. We'll be talking a bit about some of the product releases, at least the expected releases they have coming out in 2025. So there's lots to cover. Again, this is episode one of a multi-part series. We'll be focusing on Innovus. Really happy to have them as a content partner and really happy to help bring their story to you. None of this is possible without our sponsors, and this episode is sponsored by Paragon Medical. So before we get into my conversation with Louis Vogt, I'm really happy to hand over the camera and the microphone to my fantastic Device Talks colleague, Kayleen Brown.
Sean Miller, Divisional Vice President of Business Development for Paragon Medical, a business of Emmetech Inc. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I cannot wait to sit down with you today.
I'm excited as well. Looking forward to getting into it.
Perfect. So Sean, I know we have a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about the orthopedic industry. We're going to be talking about supply chain. But before we get into that, would you mind sharing a 30,000 view of Paragon Medical? Tell us about Paragon.
Yeah, for sure. Paragon's evolved a lot over the last decade through various acquisitions and expanded capabilities. We're a contract design and manufacturing organization, a CDMO for short. Our focus has historically and still today in orthopedics, as well as minimally invasive surgery, robotic assisted surgery, and drug delivery component support.
Excellent. Thank you, Sean. So I'd like to shift into the supply chain environment. It's constantly changing. It's hard to understand how to move forward. So from your perspective and Paragon Medical's perspective, can you help describe the current environment for supply chain in the medical device industry?
Yeah, for sure. And one word, I would say dynamic. As my boss says, there's never a dull moment. There's the common ones that we've been seeing, and they're just manifesting themselves in bigger ways today than what we've seen in the past. And we expect to continue to face some of these challenges as we go forward as well. Probably three big areas, I would say. One, the overall macro environment. How do we navigate tariffs in a global supply chain world? How do we understand the various market demands in those different regions to support, as well as the regulatory requirements and what's changing? How do we continue to supply product into that space? The second is cost pressure, and not just cost pressure on the supply chain, but cost pressure on medical device as a whole at our customer level and at the supply chain level. And then finally, the last one is how do we match up demand and supply? In the demand space, we have the dynamic of growing procedural volumes, plus a safety stock of never wanting to miss a surgery, and then a gap between the end user and the demand planner of what's needed when, tied off with, from a supply standpoint, do we have the people we need in place? Do we have the manufacturing capacity? Do we have the right capabilities for that next generation or that launch to follow? So those would be the three areas of what I describe as dynamic, and they continue to change. And we get to work through each day.
Okay, Sean, so you mentioned a couple of different pressures like forecast accuracy, ongoing cost pressures. So how do you get better alignment across the historically fragmented supply chain? How do you even approach that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I'll take a step back first to frame it, and then we'll dive deeper into the answer to that question. Forgive me, you'll notice I'm an engineer by background. I go back to the QCD triangle, quality, cost, delivery. You can have two, but you can't have all three. And that's a lot of the challenges that we're facing, right? When you boil it down into those areas, how do we deliver quality product in the right time, at the right speed, and at an appropriate cost? And as you referenced, the supply chain historically has been fairly fragmented into different capabilities across the supply chain, some in-house at our customers and then external. And then even the supply chain itself from an external standpoint is a lot of different niche spaces of what people are capable of doing. a lot of where we see this going and how to start addressing these issues is greater end-to-end supply chain control and just in alignment with whether it's our customers or within just the network of suppliers here. And by doing that more specifically from whether it's engagement on new product development and how do we help commercialize and engage from a commercialization standpoint and tying all those loose strings together or in the day-to-day manufacturing supply and be able to help connect powder or raw material all the way through to finished good packaging, we can take lead time down. We typically can compress cost while we actually have a tighter grip and control on the quality in front of us.
We'll hear more from our sponsor, Paragon Medical, a little later on in the podcast. But if you want to learn more about Paragon Medical now, please visit their website at paragonmedical.com. That's P-A-R-A-G-O-N medical.com. Or, and I could not recommend this more, please visit them next week at AAOS. Visit paragonmedical.com/trade shows to set up that meeting. And now we bring you our interview with Louis Vogt, Group President of Reconstructive for Enovis.
Well, Louis Vogt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
Good to have you. I'm anxious to unpack Enovis' story on our upcoming episodes. Happy to have you go first. As anyone who listens to our podcast, we love to really unpack the leading medtech businesses. But first, with every episode, we want to start with the career and the story of the person we're interviewing. So, Louis, what was it that that brought you into the medtech industry?
You know, I did my internship in 2001. Zimmer was just coming out of a spinoff from Bristol Myers Squibb. That's how long ago I guess it was. Yeah, and the industry was in a rampant growth mode, and I was fortunate to work for a great leader named Ray Elliott. He was the CEO of the company, and some industry titans. You know, shout out to Bill McCarrick and Todd Davis, the guys that bet on me. But, you know, I mean, knees, I came into knees, I think, in 2004. Knees was the biggest and the most lucrative division at Zimmer at the time. And I wasn't given much of a choice. I remember the speech I was given, which is that it started with, "You're a team player, right?" That was Todd Davis. And of course, I about a month later, I was in knees. But I really loved it. And knees is sort of my one of my big passions to this day. And it's changed a lot. You know, it's crazy to think that in 1995, the first knee system that actually had a cruciate retaining and posterior stabilized design was the next gen knee. It's crazy to think that it was just that long ago that modern knee technology kind of everybody sort of decided that that's where it needed to go. And that gave Zimmer a huge head start. And the growth we were experiencing at that period of time was really fun. And it was really exciting. And we really changed the game in a lot of ways. But it has changed a lot. And it continues to change a lot, right? Innovation is the core of what we do in orthopedics. I mean, it's ultimately all about patient care. Right, and advancing patient care, making patients' lives better. And so it's our constant quest to figure out how we do that. And there's different ways to approach it with different risks and challenges. But at the end of the day, we all want the same thing, which is that, you know, when we or our parents or our grandparents or friends and loved ones, you know, have arthritis or a debilitating disease, you know, and they need our products, that they can get back to doing what they love to do, pain-free and live the life that they should live. And we take great pride in doing that, not just here, but everywhere in orthopedics. And, you know, I think, you know, knees probably has changed more in the last 20 years than certainly more than hips, but similar to what has happened in the shoulder market with the reverse total shoulder. And so it's been a crazy run, and things in our industry tend to cycle around over many years. When I first started, navigation was really popular, and it became a significant chunk of the market, and then patient-specific instruments became really popular, and it became a significant chunk of the market, and then, you know, it's sort of, both of those sort of died down, and then, of course, robotics came into the equation.
Yep.
And of course, now that's a major talk of the industry and a major trend that is impacting our business and also how we treat patients, right? And so in our quest to get better, that's a major theme in what's happening right now and an area where we focused a lot and trying to do it in the right way to not only improve patient lives, but also do it in a healthy and economically savvy way for all stakeholders.
That's excellent. So let's talk a bit about Innovus, about it's how it came to be, and then I want to sort of just learn how you just what made you decide to join a newer player in the ortho space. So this is a good opportunity just to bring our listeners up to speed on the origins of Innovus and how it came to be.
Yeah, so many folks would know DJO. DJO was a long time the bracing and supports leader worldwide. You know, as part of a portfolio that Blackstone had acquired, and in doing so, they also acquired Encore Medical, which is the foundation for the implant side or the recon side of the business. And you know, we grew up as a company that took some strategic bets in some major ways, in particular with the reverse shoulder, and then in the knee with the conforming bearings and kinematically driven bearings. And it took us from really nothing to something pretty quick. You know, so it's a really fun story to tell, and it shows the impact of engineering and science and the technical advancements and, you know, and how betting on the right horse can really change the trajectory of the business and the space. You know, in 2019, a company called Colfax acquired DJO. Colfax was a multi-billion dollar company known for their M&A. Had bloodlines that dated back to a company called Danaher. You know, Danaher, one of the most world-class organizations with M&A. And you know, they bought us out when we were spinning off from Blackstone, and then, you know, they came in with an aggressive agenda to how do we compete in these spaces and do it the right way. A couple years later, we spun off a part of the company called ESAB, the industrial manufacturing portion, and then we rebranded as a company called Innovus, right, focused on med device and med tech. And that's really how it all came to be. Very rich bloodlines from both the Encore or DJO organization and then the Colfax organization that came in and brought in completely new skills and experiences when it comes to M&A. And it really changed our future. And I'm very fortunate that I get to you know, be with a company that looks at the market and looks at our strategic position and, you know, really wants to advance the agenda, you know, aggressively so that we can accomplish our goals. And that's where we sit today.
So tell me about your decision to join Innovus. Was it Innovus at the time? You've been there for 7 years, so it sounds like it was sort of in the transition period at that time.
Right. It was DJO at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I came over in 2017, and it was, you know, after a great run at Zimmer and Zimmer Biomet, I was looking for, you know, an opportunity to have a bigger impact and grow personally and professionally. And I came to DJO. We had a leader at the time of the company, a very charismatic and dynamic leader who's an industry titan in Brady Shirley. And Brady's vision and his passion for what he did really spoke to me, and we saw eye to eye on kind of where we wanted the business to go, and I decided to make the big change and relocate from Warsaw to Austin and join the DJO family, and couldn't have been a better decision for me.
So, talk a bit about the portfolio that you oversee. What does the reconstructive portfolio look like?
Sure. So, you know, when you think about recon, a lot of times people think about large joints. So within recon, we put the large joints and the foot and ankle or extremities businesses together. So, mm-hmm. You know, for us as we define it, or for people listening as they define it, you know, that's our upper extremities recon and soft tissue portfolio, and the same thing with our hip, knee, and foot and ankle portfolios, all under that umbrella globally. So our business structure is a little different than that, but
yeah,
Essentially, it's you know, what we would call traditional, you know, large joint reconstruction and foot and ankle.
So let's first take a look at your knee business. What are some of your leading products there, and give us a sense of how they differentiate themselves from others in the market?
Yeah. Okay. So in the knee business, you know, we our story starts with you know, again, it's similar to the reverse shoulder, is you know, we started out differently, right? And that's how, when, you know, as a small company, you can really use innovation to change the game. And we became very passionate about kinematics and kinematically driven articular surfaces, and you know, we found a concept called the dual pivot a long time ago. A great PhD from the University of Florida named Scott Banks was the guy who had the original concept, and then various surgeons helped us bring it to life. And, you know, it's part of the essence of our innovation, where we call it different by design. And it was somewhat of a radical thought at the time in the you know, mid-2000s or late 2000s, this type of bearing. And in fact, it was a little bit, it kind of was, you know, was a totally different concept, or somewhat looked down upon at the time. And, you know, ultimately what we really believed in was that, you know, this sort of kinematically driven bearing could change the game and change patient satisfaction. And we made a big bet on it. It's really unfolded the way that we thought it would unfold, similar to the reverse shoulder. And, you know, now today, you know, kinematically driven bearings are the number one growing articular surface or constraint option in knee arthroplasty. And so we've benefited from that tailwind quite a bit as the market has evolved in that direction. And I think that as we think about differentiation and you know, how we fit into the overall equation, we have a very unique design, and a lot of the IP is still proprietary. It's still protected, and we really believe in it. And it's fundamentally different than what exists today. You know, the clinical results for it are still unfolding. I mean, we're about 10 years into, almost 10 years into the Empower version of this, what we call 3D, or this dual pivot concept. And the results are very compelling, and we're very excited to share them. So, you know, we have a system that took a bet on something that was radically different, you know, 15 years ago. We've refined it about 10 years ago, and we're reaping the rewards of our differentiation today.
How does it differ from, I guess, more quote-unquote traditional designs or standard designs? What's the principal difference?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, a long time ago, it was all about, you know, sort of cruciate retaining and posterior stabilized. And in fact, here in the United States, the surgeon who really sort of changed the game with more ultra congruent or congruency driving the biomechanics was a guy named Aaron Hoffman. Aaron was he's out of the University of Utah for a long, long time. Aaron became a friend of mine when Zimmer acquired CenterPulse late 2003, 2004. And I was put in charge of managing those brands, and I got to know him well. And he's of course an industry titan, and his literature and research speaks for itself. But Aaron really believed in this ultra congruent concept, and that was sort of where, you know, it was looked at differently at the time. But now, a lot of what he believed in, a lot of what he was trying to accomplish, has come to life, and that's that, you know, we can narrow the guardrails with implants and articular surface geometries so that we can drive kinematics down a more narrow path, similar to what they experience with a healthy knee. And you know, it was a big bet at the time, we took it, and we had a great engineering team behind it. And ultimately, our patient satisfaction scores became differentiated. And we've published on that, and we even have studies that have our knee in one knee and a competitor's knee in another knee. And we've showed a statistically significant improvement between patient satisfaction scores. So, you know, that sort of technology and that innovation differentiation is what set us on fire. And it's really still the backbone to what we do today. But of course, you know, as we get bigger and bigger, we have to expand into all the different modalities and options within the knee space. And that's what we're really focused on now.
We're going to take a quick break from our interview with Louis Vogt, Group President of Reconstructive for Innovis, to bring back our sponsor, Paragon Medical. So that was a really great overview of the historical OEM and contract manufacturer relationship. Sean, do you see this relationship shifting? And if so, what could that look like?
Yeah, I think it has to. The market requires it, and for the OEM to be successful and for the contract manufacturer to be successful, it's going to have to continue to adapt. So I see businesses going one of two ways from a supply chain standpoint. One, you get more niche, you really invest in your core capabilities, and you become one of the two or three people in the world that can offer this type of service or manufacturing capability. And then you grow at that market size and market ability to take that type of growth. The second pathway is more along the lines of what we just talked about, is around how do we simplify the end-to-end supply chain, which then requires the contract manufacturer to expand capabilities on the front end and back end to really start grouping in more of a breadth and more of that type of control that we have here.
So with that in mind, how is the CDMO market investing to support growth?
So when we look at innovation, it's how do we enable a greater service or a faster product or a better quality product for our OEMs, going back to the QCD triangle, right? How do we take quality and make it less detective and inspecting every part we manufacture and getting more preventative with it and know that that next part coming off is going to be good? From a delivery standpoint, how do we piece together the right capabilities under one roof or within a node of roofs to really help expedite the time and minimize the shipping time in between, while improving the overall value add within the process? And then from overall cost standpoint, how do we continue to invest in operational excellence? How do we incorporate some of the machine learning of today's world and the talk around AI into the business to better anticipate where we're going? So all said, even on the hard side of the question, we talked about overall relationships with the OEM and where that goes. How these get tied together to make sure we're in lockstep is huge. One of the other areas I've failed to mention in my first list is looking at the overall development support of this. So historically, we've been more of a pure build-to-print manufacturer, and now we see a lot of the market going towards helping support the design and development side, helping drive regulatory clearance. You can't do that on your own as a contract manufacturer. That has to be in sync and aligned. But that's where some of that innovation is going to really start to show up, not just in the launches we're seeing in 25, but the launches we're going to see through 2030 and forward as we go.
Well, Sean Miller, Divisional VP of Business Development with Paragon Medical, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with you.
Yeah, Kaylin, appreciate your time. Love the questions and enjoyed the conversation.
A huge thank you to Paragon Medical for sponsoring this episode of Ortho Innovation Talks. There are so many ways to connect with Paragon Medical in person at industry conferences throughout the year. Don't miss them at AAOS next week, or connect with them virtually on their website at paragonmedical.com. That's P-A-R-A-G-O-N medical.com. And now we bring you the conclusion of our conversation with Louis Vogt, Group President of Reconstructive for Innovus.
So I want to get into ankle in a moment, but so I imagine that your different approach is the principal way you're differentiating yourselves in a crowded market with some larger competitors. I mean, how does a smaller company find its way, build its market share in an industry like orthopedics, where there doesn't seem to be a lot of shifting one direction or the other? It seems to be a solid sort of slow moving forward industry, but maybe that's a perception I have that isn't fair.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what we said all for a long, long time, Tom. I do think it's different now. I think share is less sticky.
Interesting.
I really do. I also think that, now don't get me wrong, it's still sticky compared to a lot of other spaces in orthopedics and, of course, med device. But I think it's less stickier now than ever. I think people are more open-minded to, you know, how could we advance it from here? And, you know, I think you know, enabling technologies, digital and enabling technologies and robotics have really, you know, taken center stage here on, you know, what can we do from a technique and an execution standpoint to enhance the, you know, the patient experience and improve outcomes. And I think people are still pushing the limits on where we can go with implants, and that'll continue to happen over time. But, you know, as a small company, it's hard to break out, you know, immediately, right? It may seem like an overnight success story, but it's not. I mean, if you look at what we've done in reverse shoulders and what we've done in knees, you know, that's a 15-year overnight success story, with a major bet that happened in the beginning that turned out to catch fire and then, of course, changed the trajectory of where companies are focusing right now. So those good bets allowed us to sort of start the tidal wave in a different direction and then ride the wave aggressively and maybe even ahead of where our competitors are. And that it takes that sort of innovation to really break out. There's not a lot of magic to it. Outside of that, we pride ourselves on unbelievable customer experience and touch. We think that's a differentiator for us. Culture and people and the surgeon KOLs, we call it surgeon-centric innovation, is really a differentiator for us, and it's become part of our DNA. And when we talk to the surgeons who use our product, it's one of the main reasons they love working with us is that personal and that human touch. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, the things that have really broke through and made us category changers and share changers and put us where we are today is really that innovation that was on the front end that people may have been too afraid to chase that we decided.
So let's move from the knee down to the ankle. How different are the two industries, and how are you finding your way into building market share in the ankle, which is an increasingly competitive space?
Great question. Yeah. So the foot and the ankle is a completely different market, right? And we had to make the decision that we wanted to play in a different space with this one. And we've done it in a way that really has its own dedicated channel to go capture that, which we knew from the beginning we needed to do. We put it together with a grouping of M&A transactions that put us in a strong position pretty quickly. But it's a different game altogether, and we think the prospects for it in the future are really encouraging. It's the fastest growing of the spaces we compete in. Shoulder's not too far behind, but foot and ankle is the king right now. That growth can help feed a lot of innovation and fuel a lot of innovation. And we very selectively made transactions that gave us a competitive advantage in certain positions that we really wanted to pursue. And so, we talk about the three big ones that we did in foot and ankle. Those are public. There's been more beyond that sort of advanced our strategic position, but not big enough on the radar to note publicly. But what we've put together is a $100 million plus business that's, growing at strong double digits, and will continue to do that. I think in foot and ankle, it's evolving rapidly as we speak, right? In fact, a major announcement last week in the space. The players in the U.S. are consolidating a little bit. And that shouldn't slow us down. In fact, that should help our cause. And we're really looking forward to seeing what we can do with the business as we deepen our innovation agenda there and also deepen our channel strength in foot and ankle. So we're poised for a really big year again in foot and ankle. We think we had market leading growth in 2024. We're poised for a really, really big year in 2025. And our recipe and our playbook as to how we got there, we also think is reproducible. So a lot of runway left in where we can go.
You mentioned it when we were talking about knee, the relationship with the surgeons being primary. I imagine you have a similar strategy with foot and ankle. Who are the physicians performing those procedures, and how do you build that same level of connection with them?
Yeah, so it's different. Right. So there's in the foot and ankle world, there's of course the MD population and they do a lot of the major cases and reconstructive cases and things along those lines, major trauma. There's also the podiatrist piece of the market, which is, really grown massively and helping a tremendous amount of patients. I mean, what they've brought to the market and the advancement they've brought to the market has really changed foot and ankle in the space that we know in the last 10 years. And so, that new audience introduces new challenges, new call points, new opportunities. And that's why, it's different than what you see in the large joint piece of the world. Having said that, the innovation is still very ripe. I mean, it's a young field, right? It's 20 to 30 years behind what we know as large joint reconstruction. So innovation has continued to make a major impact in brand selection and equity. That's what it takes to really prosper in the foot and ankle space is an innovation agenda that's just, unstoppable and has a market leading cadence and really a focus on the customer in a way that's you know, you can create an advantage with your channel. And that's what we've really done. We've got great dynamic leaders. The guy running the business is incredible. The sales force and the head of sales and our marketing and engineering teammates are really incredible. And they've been able to take a collection of key opinion leaders and put an agenda out there and a portfolio out there that's caught the attention of basically everybody in the space. So we look forward to seeing how that continues to unravel. But I expect major share acquisition as we continue to unfold the foot and ankle business and really a market leading position there.
Excellent. Well, just to wrap up, we're recording this just so folks know prior to the AAOS meeting. So, not speaking specifically to that, but it's always a good place to release some good news, to make some great announcements. What does 2025 look like for Novus? What are the big changes you're bringing forth, and what can we expect to hear from you this year?
We're excited about what 2025 brings. We're excited about the momentum we created in Q4 of 2024 and how that'll carry into Q1 and throughout the year. It's a groundbreaking year for us in terms of new product innovation and things coming to market. And that's the sort of engine that we need to create and foster and do every year to continue disrupting the market and growing as fast as we have. And so I don't want to comment too much on what we're aiming at specifically, but I can tell you that we've got some big shoulder stuff coming out, some very exciting hip and knee things coming out, and a handful of major launches in the foot and ankle space as well. So I think innovation is going to be the key to our growth in 2025, and ball's in our court to make it happen.
Excellent. All right. Well, it's a great story. Very happy to have it shared here. Louis Vogt, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you very much.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on episode 1 of season 2 of the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast. We've got a lot of other great Innovus stories coming your way. None of this happens without our great sponsors like Paragon Medical. Thank you, Paragon, for supporting us in our ongoing effort to tell important medtech stories. We'd appreciate you very much, our listeners, if you could share this episode on LinkedIn. And when you do, connect with me, Tom Salemi, and connect with our managing editor, Kayleen Brown, so we can be part of your future MedTech conversations on LinkedIn and elsewhere, wherever you want to post it. Also, make sure you like, follow, and or subscribe to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you do not miss a future episode. We've got a lot of great podcasts coming out, including future episodes of the Ortho Innovation Talks Podcast, so make sure you don't miss a single one. That's it, folks. Really appreciate you being part of season 2 of the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast. Lots of great episodes coming your way.